Here we go, staging them up on the left-hand lane. The Throwdown Motorsports 65 Chevy 2, 626 on the dial, it's Zach Slump. On the right-hand side, the Icon Pistons Diamond Engine and Machine 74 Vega Wagon, 592 on the dial, it's Jake Hodge.
Welcome to Dialed In, episode Ni-Ouf. That is French for nine. We're almost to double digits, and we thank the tens of you that have stuck with us through this. No, we appreciate all our listeners. It's still doing really well out there with the download. We appreciate it. I could welcome my co-host, Jake Hodge. Jake, what's up, buddy?
So are we just, each week we're going to announce the episode number in a different language. We did Ocho last week, French
right.
This week.
Yep. Shout out to the French Canadian racer. You guys are awesome.
Yeah. There's one that's Richard Arnold's in Pensacola. He's going from the Million to Pensacola to make the wife happy and then to Reynolds this week.
Nice.
Yeah. How's it going, man?
It's going well. It's been a good week, I guess, getting the kids ready for Halloween. My son Lucas is going to be, he's decided he wants to be Steve from Minecraft. So he's been playing Minecraft a lot. So we got him a Steve costume. So it looks pretty awesome. And then Justin, my 9-year-old stepson, he wanted to be Skull Trooper from Fortnite, whatever exactly that is. I don't keep up with the video games anymore. I see it sometimes because, the boys play it all the time. And
you sound like you had a lot of time on your hands.
Yeah, well, it took a nice cruise down to Bowling Green to go racing on Sunday, and it was a pretty nice day. I really wish we would have got to race. Yeah, it rained a couple times and pulled the plug with 200 cars on the ground. I never seen a line that long to get into Beach Bend.
Yeah, I saw pictures. That was ridiculous.
It was crazy how many cars showed up. I will say that. And everybody was ready to race. It looked like it was going to be a good day, hindered by a couple of small showers. But yeah, I mean, I'm not going to get into, I don't want to bash Beach Bend. I really don't, because I love that place. And I wish that I was on here, though. That's my problem, is I wish that I was on here saying, thank you guys for racing. Thank you for, not giving up after that second little shower and seeing the rest of the day was going to be good. And that's what I wish I was saying. And that's just an honest opinion. And I'm not trying to bash the track. I just wish they would have done something differently. And I'm just, expressing my opinion as a customer that I felt like for me driving two and a half hours down there to race, that we wouldn't just give up after the second little shower. I know it would have been a late night. We all know how Beach Bend gets. It does get a little bit, the dew falls heavy there. So, in my opinion, then you get the tractor out and you drag it. When there's no cars going down the track, drag it and keep the moisture off of it, and then we'll be good. So, it would have been all right. Yeah, it would have been a late night, and maybe would have got to work a little bit less asleep or a little bit late on Monday. But that's, to me, that's racing. And that's just how I feel about it. So I understand other people's point of view and I respect it. And, I have no lack of respect for any racer that feels differently. That's absolute. I don't want anybody to confuse that.
Think about it this way. You get to go back next week for free.
Yeah. They still get to go back. It was a long drive for us. For me personally, that is not going to work out the rest of the year. But that is what it is. So, but yeah, I wish we would have got to race. But you did get the race. So tell us how your weekend in Darlington went.
Yeah, I loaded up the wagon and drove out 12 and a half, 13 hours to Darlington. Ran the 10K Thursday race and drove it down to 9 cars where I kicked out of my lane. And I missed the memo, apparently, that the right was 10 thou faster. I clicked it on 7 red after I was just 7 and 8 back-to-back. My guy laid down a stellar 40 total next to me. Friday, they canceled Friday before the event ever started on Wednesday or Thursday. We're getting into.
Yeah, so I saw Saturday. That. They did a practice tree race or something, didn't they?
Somewhat. I went down to like 6-1 round and 5 the other round to get my butt handed to me. Just like,
well, that's good they put something on, though, in between.
Yeah, it wasn't really a full cooperation. There's probably 15 or 20 of us in there racing.
Mm.
I got my butt handed to me just like I do on the starting line just about every other lap. but the plan Saturday was to run the 50, Friday 20K, and that did not happen. The 50 just happened, and they made an announcement towards the end of the night on Saturday that they're canceling the 15 altogether and running the 20 on Sunday, which was originally scheduled for the 15. No refund on the 15. If you wanted $200 back, you could not race 20. So So I understand the decision from a promoter standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's a lot of an uproar about it. You know, there's only 150, 160 cars on the grounds total. So they paid the 50, they paid the 20. It is what it is. You know, that's not my call. And I was there as a racer. You know, I had a good time. My results after Thursday were subpar, but I had fun.
Yeah. Well, I mean, watching on Motor Mania, the little that I did, you know, it looks like a great facility. I definitely am looking forward to trying to get that on the schedule next year to go to Darlington.
my first pass Thursday on the facility aspect of it, I made a pass like at the end of time runs, and I was in the dragster, and I thought I was going to crash. I made a track like it in my life. I feel like if I got out of the car and looked down at the racetrack, I feel like I could see my reflection. It literally looked like driving on glass.
Yeah.
That's something I had never experienced. I was kind of mind blown about 100 foot out. I thought, I'm fixing to crash this 450 car right here. There's no way this is going to hook. And it went right down Broadway, and that thing printed to the thou and needed somebody to let go consistently, like everything else I've driven all year long.
I've seen that effect from the, because they have a lot of lighting there, don't they?
Yep.
Yeah, and that lighting really reflects off the racetrack. I've seen that a couple times at Indy or at Bowling Green and some parts of the racetrack at Bowling Green when the lights are really, you know, at night are really beating down on it. But yeah, it looked like a great track. And from a promoter's point of view, you know, that amount of entries sounds like that they still paid out a lot of money and had some big winners. And so tell us about where you're at now, what's coming up for your racing next, Jake.
I am sitting at Motor Mania EV World Headquarters in Warner Robins, Georgia. It's like 40 minutes, I think, from Silver Dollar, where the SFG race is at this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I am not competing. I have to work this weekend, but the Canadians are going to fly down, and I've got their rig with me, and they're coming down to have some fun $350,000 races this weekend.
Right on. Right on. Sounds good. And to go to our next segment, why don't you tell us a little bit about Law Chevy?
Yeah, Law Chevrolet Buick in Boonville, Indiana is a phone sales and center proudly serving the tri-state area for over 10 years. Racing has always been in their blood, and over the past few years, they've hit the road, and they've been blessed to have the opportunity to work with all the racers they came in contact with through the all of the Law Chevrolet Buick staff. I'd like to thank all of the racers for the opportunities. And remember, if you are not buying a vehicle at Law Chevrolet, it's not the tires you will be kicking. They are still doing the dialed-in promo. If you go in there and buy a vehicle of your dreams, if they don't have it on the property, they will find it. I mean, they've got access to hundreds of cars anywhere in the world that they can have dropped off at their dealership. So if you go in and say, hey, you know what? I heard about this deal on Dialed In. You know, I'd like to buy a car. You purchase a car, you get free gas 3 months, up to $600 worth. I don't know how you could go buy a car anywhere else. For, you know, that's on top of negotiating what you want for your prices. You know, they're not going to sit there and tell you, nope, the sticker price is what you're paying. Because, you know, they want to see you in the ride, or you're just like you want to be in it. And they have their annual Law in the Fall car show. They have a ton of cars that come out for that. It's the November 3rd from 8 a.m. to 3 a.m. They have barbecue served everyone, and it says right here on my show notes that Billy and Zach Schlump will be in it.
Yep, that's right. Just got off the phone with my dad earlier, and dad's got a couple nice old Chevys we're going to drive down there and take my son Lucas and hang out with everybody and say hi. So come on out. I will have Dialed In stickers. So stop by, say hi. We're going to be there having a good time. There should be a ton of cars, and looks like it's going to be a great day. And then while you're there, I'm sure they'll have you know, your sales and promotion going on. What a better time to go down there and look at to buying a car from Law Chevy.
Yeah, and their address for anybody wanting to go to Law in the Fall Car Show is an awesome, awesome time. 2094 West State Route 62, Boonville, Indiana. And lawautomotivegroup.com for all the information and all the online. They have online links for all the vehicles there also. If you wanted to look at anything they have in their inventory, go to lawautomotivegroup.com. Have at it. So, Zach, as I was sitting in Darlington, I had the pleasure to watch the Southern Footbrake Challenge on Motor Mania coming from Holly Springs, Mississippi, and you've bought and bumped a lot more than I have, so I'll let you dive into those results.
Yeah, I don't know about that. Not ever very successfully. I won a race or two, but never usually got anything rolling. So these guys, though, that are basically professionals at it, were racing down at the Southern Footbrake Challenge at Holly Springs.
It should rename it to the Josh Green Nationals, what they should rename to.
Basically. And I should have said also, sorry, BTE, title sponsor of the Southern Footbrake Challenge. So good job, BTE, supporting sportsman racing. So Friday, looks like they were supposed to have a gambler's race, I believe Thursday, that they had to cancel due to some rain. And they started Friday afternoon a little bit late, but the weather cleared up. And after that, it was clean sailing for him the rest of the weekend, which is great to see for that event. And so Josh Green took the win Friday, the big 10K win over J.D. McNeil. Looks like J.D. Just turned it a little bit red in the final, handing the win over to Josh Green. Like you said, that is always, at any of these foot brake races, is a threat. So then that led into Saturday, which was the Ellison Brothers show. How many times have we seen this at a bottom bulb event where these two brothers just go off? And you never know, they're driving whoever's car that they can. They're in 18 different cars, it seems like, and it doesn't matter. Caleb, the wind light, Caleb, just, if it's Ellison in that lane, the wind light's coming on.
Yeah, Caleb put on his Facebook that was Charlie's mom's of a 14 different car he has driven. And I haven't counted mine, plan on doing that. I got to give him a run for his money.
Yeah. Yeah, 14 different rides. And so in the big 10K final on Saturday, saw Edmund Ellison taking the win over John Burleson. And so that was for 10K. And then his brother, Caleb Ellison, driving Charlie Lockhart's Monza, takes the win in the final of the gambler's race over Aaron Jones. I just wanted to say Aaron. I'm sorry, you're the first one I think I got to say. So, Aaron Jones, good job, buddy. Sunday, 10K win to finish up the Southern Foot Brake Challenge was Dylan Bontrager taking the win over the Kentucky Headhunter himself, Michael Crass, in his Mustang. I don't know if anybody...
Yeah, Crass is a character. He rode onto the racetrack with three cars stacked up on a ramp and ready to go at it.
Yep, Michael Crass out of
one of them hanging on the back, probably.
Yeah, out of Kentucky, and always a tough customer. He definitely, everywhere he goes, I see a lot of wind lights come on for Crass. He has his own way about doing it, which is awesome. I think Bracket Racing has a lot of different approaches, and if anybody's ever seen him race, it's quite different, but he does very well. But yeah, big props to Dylan Bontrager taking the win there, and looks like what was a great event, 3-10 grand to win champions crowned for foot breakers is great, and awesome job by the promoters for putting that race on. So, Jake, why don't you tell us about what...
They fought a little bit of weather Friday, too, because I don't know if you saw where it just started misting in the middle of one of the rounds, and they sent everybody back to the trailer. They came across the PA and said, we're bound and determined to get this thing done, and it's going to happen before midnight. We're not going to be here till 1 o'clock in the morning racing. And a little backstory on Josh Green. Josh owns a wrecker service. I was having motorhome trouble in Carolina, and I was coming home, and you have to go up the hill right there. I think it's just on the other side of Nashville or something like that. I forget which hill it is. Josh hit me up. He said, hey, call me whenever you get close. He said, meet me at the bottom of the hill. I'll hook your trailer to my wrecker, and I'll take the trailer up the hill. Mm-hmm. And then once we get to the top, I'll pull over and take the trailer going down the hill on the other side. Well, that was cool, and I found out Josh lived 40 minutes one way from that certain hill, and it was 12:30, 1 o'clock in the morning, and he had back surgery, and he ain't been back to work yet. That's instant karma right there. That's a good dude that just wants to do good, I think, and he does that by giving people like Edmund a chance to wheel that beautiful Chevy, too. Man, that is an immaculate race car.
Yeah, it is. I always love the paint job on that car. If anybody hasn't seen it, and also I wanted to give a shout-out reading these results to Drag Champ website. It's awesome, doing a great job posting the sportsman results up on the on the big money bracket scene as well, and getting them out quickly and doing just a great job at it. So shout out Drag Champ, thank you for making these results easier on me.
Yep, that's right. Yeah, Darlington, the No Limit Promotions Triple Crown Series Thursday 10K, the winner was Willie C. Wilcolton, and the runner-up was Michael Shute. Michael turned it a little pink in the final. The $50,000 race winner on the delayed weekend. So the 50 was the next thing ran after Thursday. It was ran Saturday morning. We'll be talking to him here in a minute. Will Holloman over Randy Biddle Jr. hitting the bottom ball in the Malibu. And I don't
know. Yeah, that was very impressive.
I don't think he even entered no box. He's just hitting the bottom, and he had the buy at three, and there was at three, there was still no split. There was a buy at nine. Megan Lotz is on the buy at nine. She said no deal, not giving away money at nine. At five, there was no deal. I forget who was on the buy there. Holloman was on the buy at five.
Mm-hmm.
He said, no, if we're not doing a deal at nine, we're not doing it at five. And roll back around to three, it was Megan Lotz who had the buy at nine. Holloman had the buy at five. He was still in at three. And Biddle made it through. And Biddle said, I'm not giving away money here, but we'll set the purse in the final. I'll tell you what I'm willing to do. And if you guys want to make a deal between you, that's have at it.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit of a side note, I got permission to talk about from Will. We talked to Will in our interview here about it's a really, really good interview about, you know, some of the struggles he's endured trying to do this for a living. Will sold his golf cart Saturday morning to make sure he had enough money to pay his tab.
Dude, that's dedication.
That is unreal. And Thursday, the gambler race, him and Chris Reynolds didn't run the final. They just split and quit. But, you know, he wanted to go to Reynolds the following weekend. So he sold his golf cart on Saturday morning to make sure he could pay his tab at Darlington and pay his tab at Reynolds and his fuel to get there and back. And, you know, that's just a testament to, you know, how bad that guy wants it, what he's willing to sacrifice to do it. He wins the 50 Saturday and offers to give the guy every dime back for the golf cart to get the golf cart back, and the guy turns him down. So the guy with the golf cart, well, we won't talk about that.
But yeah, and I can relate, and it is a great interview, and he definitely goes into awesome detail, so please stick with us and listen to that. And I can relate. Not that I had sold a golf cart, but I've been headed home from Tentuck before putting diesel on a credit card. I had just enough money in the bank to cover the check I just wrote. Yes. So I understand, and much respect. It was a big win.
Yeah, I've done the same thing. I sold a Dominator carburetor to Adam Phillips for $75 one time. Just to get to the racetrack the next day. That's ridiculous. Anyway.
And Adam probably put it on and won 5 races with it.
Adam Phillips, oh, you guarantee it. Sunday 20K, the dude that finally got it done, Kick Booty Motorsports, Kevin Pruitt, after 3 really, 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 really big race runner-ups, he cashes in $20,000 Sunday over Robert Vogler, the third RV3. Not the third, you just call him RV3. Robert Vogler. Which was laying down incredible laps, and Kick Booty getting it done in the door car. At 3 cars, it was Benny Ulmer, which is Kevin's father-in-law, in the truck, Kick Booty truck. It was, no, sorry, at 5. It was Benny in the truck. He had to race Kevin in the dragster. Kevin had to race, I don't remember who, at 5 in the wagon, and Vogler was on the bye.
Mm-hmm.
So Kick Booty had 3 of 5 in at the quarterfinal round. And the way the ladder fell, the winner of Benny in the truck and Kevin in the dragster got the bye to the final. And Kevin put 1 through with the wagon, had to come back around and race Benny. So he knew he was in the semis with 1. And Benny ended up putting down like 11 dead 2 on his son-in-law, showing him he still had it at 5 cars.
Mm-hmm. Nice.
So Kevin got the bye to the final in the wagon. Benny had to run RV3 in the truck at 3, and RV3 beat him there. And Benny gave the strike back like 1 or 2 thou, I think. It almost was an all Kick Booty final. And if anybody knows any of those people, you know that that would be one winner circle that you could hear from the state of Alaska, and they're in South Carolina. So
yeah, that Kick Booty family, and they're, you know, they're ganging up on everybody. They've got the ton of cars that are well prepared, and they're going after it. And it seems like they're making winning a regular occurrence.
Yep, that they are. The 64 car points runoff. They gave away barrels of fuel, FTI transmission, Mickey Thompson tires. The sacred prizes at the top were a Racetech dragster and a Par BRX 598.
Nice.
Going into the final round, it was Megan Lotz and Scotty Richardson. They both wanted the engine, so the winner didn't end up getting the dragster. The runner-up ended up getting the dragster, which was flip-flop mm-hmm. point sheet. But, you know, you're in the final. You can negotiate whatever you want. It'd be like the race to see who can go red or cross the center line, you know.
So, mm-hmm. Right.
Scotty ended up laying down a 5 lap or something on a 460 car. It was incredible. So Scotty Richardson ended up winning the 64 car points runoff over Megan Lotz. And yeah, that was it for the No Limit Triple Crown Series this year. I know they're planning on doing at least one race next year at MIR, and I believe it's already on the master schedule. So,
awesome.
It was a good event. Wesley and Danny did a good job, and all the staging lane guys worked their tails off just like we know they can with the same crew that I worked my first SFG race with. So, yeah, here we are, we're going to go talk to Will Holloman. Speaking of No Limit Promotions Triple Crown Series, the finale was at Darlington Dragway this past weekend, and the dude that's been knocking on the door all year long has finally cashed in. Will Holloman's here with us, the $50,000 race winner, man. How's it going?
Pretty good. Just in the shop trying to get everything ready for Reynolds.
Yeah, I think you changed your plans. You weren't going to go, and I think that money is the motivator at times, isn't it?
Yeah. kind of been driving for Chris Reynolds a little bit, and we kind of had this whole elaborate plan when we left the Million. I don't know. He feels really good in his American car, and I feel really, really good in my race tech. So I'm not even sure if he's going to go to Reynolds now. He's hanging around Darlington. So, you know, plans change, and you just kind of roll with it.
Yep, for sure. It sounds like you're definitely on a roll, you know, after the big win this weekend. So, Will, if you will, just kind of, I don't know, tell us about yourself, where you come from, maybe like a home track when you first started racing. Please let the listeners know more about you.
I'm from Pine Level, North Carolina, which is about 30 minutes north of Gallatt. Started racing junior dragsters when I was 8. Both of my parents used to race, and then they both quit when I started in juniors. And when I was like 15, I got stuck in a door car and kind of did the door car thing really for about 2 years, and then hopped in a dragster, and that's kind of where I've been ever since. So I would definitely say Gallatt is my home track. It's my place is maybe 15 minutes from Gallatt. So I don't get to race there that much. As a matter of fact, the only race I really do run there is the Fling now, unless I need to test like a converter or carburetor or something.
Is it as nice as they say it is?
Oh, absolutely. It is. It's one of the nicest facilities around. I mean, it's as far as 8 mile only facilities, it's got to be one of the nicest in the country.
I didn't know it wasn't a quarter mile track.
Nope. I think NHRA Division II ran a couple of classes to the 1,000 foot there, but everything's pretty much 8 mile.
Yeah. So I know probably a little more than most, but end of last year, you kind of made the decision to hit the road, and, you know, kind of tell us some of the stories and the struggles and then the successes of trying to race for a living. And, you know, I know it hadn't been easy at all. So kind of just give us a rundown of anybody that thinks they want to do that, of what to expect. I know it's a loaded question. I know I leave a lot of windows open here, but just give us the best rundown of it.
Well, I work for Pat Musi, building engines there. And basically, my daughter was starting kindergarten and, you know, playing T-ball and all these sports. And his shop was like 4 hours from my place. So I was staying there and living with them during the week. And, you know, we would pro mod race basically every weekend. And if not, I mean, Ricky Smith was testing and I'd have to go. And it really kept me away from home, and I was missing a lot of things. So that's kind of why I left and came back. But once I got back, I didn't race for about 6 months while I was working out there, because when you work in the, whether it's engine or chassis industry, you kind of get burnt out on things. And I didn't even want to look at a race car, much less go to the racetrack. I came home and I thought about it. I mean, I had my dragster there, and I said, you know, I'm just going to go out racing, and I'm going to see how long I can do this. I think August actually makes 2 years that I've been home from Musi. So the first year I just started racing, and I was winning enough to keep my bills paid at home and keep going. And that was it. I mean, and I won a lot of stuff. I mean, I had to go run some $2,500 races and stuff like that. But this year, SFG put out this crazy deal. No Limit was coming out with their stuff. And I was looking at Beard's master schedule, and I got to thinking about it. And I was like, you know, I could literally race for 20 grand or more every weekend from March through the end of November. So I got hooked up with a buddy that's originally from Ohio. His name is Matt Zapp,
the announcer at Gallatt.
Yep, he's the announcer at Gallatt and also the Benson Town manager. But he's from up around Ohio. He knows Abruzzi really well, and Michael Beard. And he's really, really good at, like, marketing things. So he actually came to me at Gallatt, and he said, hey, I want to help you out. And I really didn't know where this was going. But anyway, we ate lunch one day, and he said, I'm going to put together this proposal package for you for sponsors. He said, and I want you to send it to everybody you want to send it to. And I got a little bit of help from Mickey Thompson. I got a great deal with Marco Abruzzi. I got a deal with Schweitzer Dynamic. And I kind of took that. The only thing I didn't get that I really needed, it was a fuel deal. I had no luck getting a fuel deal, but I had this plan and all these races mapped out. And I just kind of left home, went racing March and April. Not really anything to talk about, but I was laying down pretty good laps. And then the fling came to Galat, so I went and grabbed Lancus's yellow car, which is like my best friend. And I ran, because I had to have two separate cars, so I ran that, and he basically told me to just keep the car and go racing. And one thing kind of led to another, and me and him kind of got together. I mean, he was backing me, and I was taking care of everything and traveling the country. And
Yeah, don't elaborate too much on that, because that's one of my questions later. So
so anyway, I just started following this master schedule. I'm not going to lie. I was taking it week by week, because I certainly didn't have the money to pull all this off. And it, you know, you just went a little bit here to enough to keep going. I mean, here I am now. Yep. As far as stories, I've got some pretty good stories. I've been 14 hours from home, in a Walmart parking lot at 3 o'clock in the morning, changing lifters and valve springs in a center section. I have been in Martin, Michigan, and somebody else had paid my pre-entry for a race in Ohio, the ACE race, the following week. And, I did not have enough money to get home. I had enough to get to Ohio, but that's all I could do was get there. Me and Shannon Justice went to a casino, and we gambled for about 2 days, really. And I made enough to get there, and I ended up hitting at one of those races for a pretty good chunk of change. And
I remember that story. Yeah.
Well, yeah.
I've got a lot of stories, but, man, some of them probably aren't appropriate for here.
Nice. Well, yeah, definitely awesome sharing the ins and outs of life on the road, bracket racing. And, yeah, what a year to do it with all the money on the line. And our paths crossed this year. Will, I think I saw you at Tentuck at Bowling Green in the summer. And anyway, I just noticed that you definitely pay enormous attention to detail in your cars. So I'm not exactly that way. I wish I was more like that. So tell us how that plays a part in your success on the track.
A lot of that, I've always been really particular over my stuff, because, I mean, my race car, ever since I've been 20 years old, my race car was my one investment in life. That I take pride in my stuff. I've never had to go out and build all brand new stuff. I kind of did the best I could, and I took as good of care of my stuff as I could along the way. But once I went to work at Musi, and really it was like Ricky Smith hanging around, I learned that these things are important. You don't think, I mean, it's two extra zip ties on something that's wired to clean it up and make it simpler. I mean, my biggest thing is, like Schweitzer, for example, they wanted to help me out with this plate system. So I felt like it was my responsibility to live up to my end to make sure it was all wired, and did it all myself. But it all goes back to pro mod racing, and sometimes I hate it, but when I come together or put something on the race car, I always keep in mind, how can I do this so that if I need to fix it or work on it or service it in between rounds, like the final round for 50 grand and this thing goes bad, how can I do it that I can fix it in 5 minutes flat?
I feel like everybody should have to spend a weekend with Chad Hester.
Yeah. Oh, I got so much respect for that guy. It's unreal.
For people that don't know, that's Ricky's crew chief. And that dude that dude does the work for four people.
Chad's one of the hardest working guys that I've ever met at the racetrack. And what I like about Chad is he doesn't expect any credit. He doesn't expect any kind of notoriety. He wants wants to go to work, and he takes pride in what he does and everything he does. If he does something himself to the car, it looks just like it came from. And I mean, Ricky wouldn't have anything any less, you know.
No. So that kind of goes into my next question. Who is your biggest inspiration in racing, whether it be your mom or your dad or anybody that you look up to this day?
As far as like a race car driver?
In the racing world, who is your biggest inspiration that you get to that point that they're at in their life, or you get to that point that you're satisfied?
I would have to say Jason Lynch, without a doubt. And the reason I say that, I mean, me and Jason have became pretty close over this year. Obviously, we've raced together every weekend, it seems like. But I've been around him and Mr. Mike for what little bit of time I got to be around his dad. I feel like I'm exactly right now where he was at when he was my age. He was trying to do the best he could with what he had. And the biggest difference in me and Jason could drive a race car. I mean, he went out every win, and he got the deals, and he's now hooked up with Tedesco's. And I mean, that's a guy that has honestly made a living racing. I mean, every deal that he pays for and every $20 in gas he puts in his personal vehicle, I mean, he earned that money racing. I mean, it's one thing to go out and win one big race a year or one every 5 years, but this guy literally keeps himself up and his whole entire family and his daughters through racing.
Yeah, and Jason's the guy that even I go to him and say, hey, this is doing this. What can I do to fix it? And he never stops and says, well, I don't know. He'll tell you, you know, one of three things to try, and one doesn't work, try the next one. And that's where I go to for advice. And you're probably right. You're probably right exactly where he was 20 years ago.
Right. Well,
yeah, I'd say that's true. So Will, you at the No Limit race, so you win on Thursday in the other car, and then you carry that momentum into Saturday. You know, I saw in your post, you say nice to take care of the tab on a Thursday. Certainly kind of just kind of talk to us to how that any type of pressure going into the rest of the weekend, or how that momentum carried into the big 50 grand win on Saturday.
Well, Darlington is this past weekend in Darlington is the first time that I've been to the racetrack in a year, I would say, and actually went on my own and paid my own tab and stuck my own neck out there, so to speak, on myself. And it was a gamble for me personally, you know, on the financial side, but I did it. And Thursday, the high roller race comes down to, I really didn't want to get into high roller race because I didn't want to keep, I've done this stuff every week, and I know you think this shootout's just $200 and it ain't no big deal, or this buyback's $100, it ain't no big deal until Sunday night when you go to settle up your tab. So,
right.
I was kind of hesitant, but the biggest thing was I wanted a few more hits. I knew my car was good. My car is always good, but I had one hit that didn't make any sense. I'd been like 8 to 10 every lap, and all of a sudden I was 6 red, and then they said they were going to give a time run. And then I realized second round winners got their entry back. So I was like, you know what, I'll gamble on this. And anyway, I end up in the finals against Chris Reynolds, who I've been driving for some here lately, and we agreed to split. And that worked out for me because I figured that would cover my weekend tab and I could relax and not worry about it, you know, because I've bumped into stage all year wondering how in the world are we going to pay this how am I going to get home, you know. So it did take the pressure off, and I will say it's going into Saturday is the first time in probably a year and a half that I actually got to race and have fun, because I haven't had fun the past year and a half. It's just not fun anymore. It's, you know, the whole aspect gets taken out of this deal. And, you know, I felt like, hey, I'm doing this on my own and my tab's clean. And if I only win $200 in round money,
sticking 200 in your pocket.
And it's, trust me when I tell you, it's hard to get to that point when you run the races that we're racing today. So going into Saturday, it was more or less like a free roll. I'll do the best I can. And next thing I know, I fell into it. So
hold on a minute. I want to touch on this real quick. Let's just tell everybody who your first three opponents were on Saturday morning, because I don't think you could have planned it any better.
I ran my first entry, first round, I ran Shane Carr.
Which was driving the red car that you drove for Chris Reynolds quite a bit this year.
I'll take that back. My first entry, first round on Saturday, I had to run Chris Reynolds in his blue undercover car. And I came back with my second entry for the first round, and I had to run Shane Carr in the red American that I had been driving. And second round, second entry, I came up and I had to run Shane Carr again in the red American that I had been driving.
It's the same guy that, you know, you've driven for all year long, and the same cars that you've been, you know, helping maintain and putting on the road. So,
yeah. And it is tough, because when you're around a race car and you drive a race car and then you stage up beside it, it's in the back of your mind just how good that thing is. And then when it's got somebody like Shane Carr in it, I mean, it's like, all right, I need to be good here, right here, you know?
8 to 10 just suddenly turned into 2 to 4.
Right, right.
Tell us the story about the yellow car, how long it's been together and the carburetor on it and all that. Because WG's car, you told me it's been from, I don't remember what, 80 to 83 since it's been put together.
Yeah, the yellow car is an 03. WG bought it. It had a 565 in it. I mean, back then, that was the thing around here. I mean, that thing was like brand hammer new, and it was the best that Racetech had. That car has basically been just like it still is today for, 14 or 15 years now, I'd say. And I know, I don't quote me on this, but me and him joke about it a lot. I'm pretty sure his dad, Mr. Gary, likes to tinker on carburetors, or at least he used to. And I'm not so sure that he didn't set that thing up. I mean, I know it went on the dyno at Nesbitt's to be perfected or whatever, but everything on that car, I mean, we put new wheels on it and tires, obviously, but the actual running gear in that thing had been there for 14 or 15 years.
And the car was bought off the shelf at some parts store, wasn't it?
Yeah, I always call it the Holley 750 double pumper.
Yeah.
it's funny, man. You know how everybody always proclaims you need a really, really, really loose converter, and you need to be a little on the fat side. And that thing, WG done a lot of super comp racing with that car, so it's got like a super, super tight converter. We actually leave the starting line at 52 or 5400 with that thing. And so it's a really, really tight converter, and it is just as lean as it can be. I mean, the header collectors are white on that.
For fuel mileage.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, it's just really good. And, I mean, that thing drinks like a quarter of a gallon of gas a run, and my 12-degree motor, it feels like it takes a gallon and a half a run, you know?
Mm-hmm. It's all those wheelies. That thing's hiking up there this weekend.
Yeah, it's the black car has a 430 rear gear in it, and basically what it's doing when it leaves the starting line is it's just climbing the ring gear. That's why Willie's really bad.
Looks like fun.
The battery's mounted in the nose, so there's not much I can really do unless I turn the launch down, but I'm scared to do that because I don't want to change.
How about you just don't touch it? We just leave her alone.
Yeah, I think at this point, sounds safe. So as we kind of wrap this up, how about we go into usually what we do is like some quick questions, and I usually ask every time now. That's become, I guess, my staple question of the interview is, what is your go-to race day meal? What's your favorite thing to eat?
Bojangles.
All right. Right on. What do you get at Bojangles?
It really, I mean, I always just get chicken and rice and fries, but the thing when you have a crowd with you is just get a tailgate special, and then everybody, you can get all the sides you want, and everybody wins.
Man, I missed that invite. I must have not got that invite over the weekend.
I didn't have it this weekend. We had a day in Rockingham, actually.
That sounds good. That makes me want Bojangles in Indiana, because there are none up here. It sucks. It sounds good.
So if you could switch places with anybody for a day, who would it be?
Anybody in the world?
Anybody.
Do I get to still be myself and racing?
For one day,
probably the guy that just hit that Mega Millions for like $2 billion.
Yeah.
You'd be that guy and wire some money to your account and go back, huh?
Yeah, I'd help a young kid out that's trying to bracket race for a living. Just, you know, I don't need a whole lot, but, you know, just a little bit.
Right on. You mentioned earlier you got your start in a door car. What type of car was it?
It was actually a Dodge Daytona. Ran like six. We had a couple different motors. It ran like 630s and then threw together one motor that ran like 570s, 560s. I was actually a whole lot better in that thing than I've ever been in a dragster. I'll be the first one to say that.
Was your mom better or your dad better back in the day?
You're going to get him in trouble at Thanksgiving, Jake.
I don't know. You know, he actually tells me how good she used to be. You know, back then, well, when they raced, it was like three different classes. It was like 650 index and 750 index, and it was all, there was no electronics. I mean, those are the days they raced in. That's why I can't even carry on a conversation with them about racing today. if they go to the racetrack and my stuff goes 445, they think like 443 is a pretty good dial. And I'm like, whoa. I appreciate
a buff up. What is that?
Yeah, but they, they understand the mathematics and, you know, how you get beat and all that. But I would have to say my mom, actually.
That's a smart answer. That's a very smart answer. I respect that for sure.
With 60 plus racetracks in North Carolina, give me one person that you don't see on Motor Mania or somebody that you don't see at these big races that really should be there.
One guy that doesn't go to any of them or one guy that doesn't travel like I think he should travel?
Yeah, like he should travel.
I'm going to have to say Michael Pascal.
I knew you were going to say that.
I've seen him win in door cars. I've seen him win in dragsters. The only, if I was in his position and had the success that he has had, I would have to leave North Carolina. Absolutely. I mean, I've only raced in North Carolina, the Fling at Gallatt, Rockingham's SFG, and I went to Gallatt one other day simply because I had blown a motor and it was Saturday and I was trying to go racing the next week on a trip. I had no money and I throwed the 565 in the yellow car and went to Gallatt the next day. But yeah, I mean,
all that.
It's like three times all years, all I've actually raced in North Carolina.
Yep. And give me one round that stands out in your mind where you think you should have won it, you messed up or something that you just, it still haunts you at night.
From this year?
Anytime.
Because
you've laid down some really, really good laps that are just one rip too many or what have you. But
one round that I should have won that I did that sticks out.
Yeah, you have any laps or even you can go to any good laps that really stick out in your mind thinking, wow, you know, that was I needed to do that then or I should have done that then.
The one round that really, really sticks out, and I know this is kind of far-fetched, but the second time I went to Michigan this year for SFG, I had to run Lee Neumeier at five cars in the 20 grander. And if I turn that wind light on, because Jose Diaz was on the bye, the other guy had a bye or whatever, all I had to do was turn the wind light on and I'm in the finals. And the yellow car don't do this, but for whatever reason, she decided to pick up a little bit. And I knew I was good when I left and I knew I was coming around the guy. And for whatever reason, I just got rid of like 100 just for insurance because I was dialed honest at that point. He was in his door car. I ended up getting there like 22 to be 3,000 under. And that really, really stung.
Yep.
Which, I mean, I kind of got over it because that's the same night I jumped in Chris's American and run that shootout up there. But that one run, I do wish I had that back because, I mean, what I saw is what was true. The yellow car, and I tried to explain this to WG all year when I did lay down runs like that. I'm like, this car is so good.
It's obvious when it does it.
Yeah, it's actually confusing me because, I mean, that thing, just say it goes 483 with a zero and it gets 15 or 20 degrees hotter and the air goes up 1,000 foot and everybody's two or three above. That thing's going 483 again.
Yep.
And you know, you go out there and you dial up 200s and the 60 and 330 were identical. And it's so good that it's everything else that throws you curveballs. I mean, it's hard to explain to him because he's like, what are you doing up there? You know?
Yeah. But yeah, man, it's been great having you on, and you know, yes. We knew it was gonna happen sooner or later, and I know you wanted it to be sooner than later, but it's never too late. And congratulations on $50,000 race win, even though I didn't get the invite to Applebee's after. No, it's all right. I let it go already. I'm not gonna hold a grudge. I promise I won't say anything bad about you this weekend on the microphone. Yeah, congratulations and thanks for coming on.
I appreciate that.
Yep. Thanks a lot, Will. It's great having you, and good luck the rest of the year. Keep knocking them dead.
All right. Appreciate it, man.
We're boiling down here on the upcoming docket list, and there's just about one big race this weekend, and that's the World Series of Bracket Racing at Silver Dollar Raceway, Reynolds, Georgia. That's where I'll be at. That's where Catch Motor Mania TV for all the action, and we're going to do a pick'em contest. We're going to leave it up to the listener, and this is going to be a family environment contest. For all 3.5 of you that listen to this podcast, and that's the one parent and two kids in the back seat.
Right.
All three of you, if you could, whenever we post this episode up, we're going to ask you for a wager idea. And it's got something Zach and I are both going to agree on. Obviously, it's not something we're going to do like a long-term wager because we do these quite often. So it's not going to be like for a whole year we've got to do this. But we're up to open to ideas.
It's got to be something reasonable that we agree on. Nothing crazy outlandish, obviously. It'll be fun.
It's just like the rule that Mark and Joanne from Motor Mania say, if you can't say it in a Mickey Mouse voice and it not laugh, it's not acceptable. So
that's a good rule.
Yeah,
that's a very good rule.
Zach, you won the last one, so I'll let you have first pick.
Oh wow! All right, very sportsmanlike of you.
We're gonna pick three.
Okay. Three picks. Well, if I get the first pick, then I'm gonna go with the guy that's on fire. I'm gonna take Holloman. I'll take Will. What do you call him? Willie Wood. That's who I'm gonna pick first.
Oh, I think it's streak continues. All right, I marked him off. All right, I will go with Jeff Serra.
All right, Jeff Serra. All right, second pick.
We struggled last time.
it definitely was a struggle. Well, then I guess I'm going to stay with the hot drivers. I'm going to go with Mr. Kenny Underwood as my second pick.
That's a good pick.
He's hot after the million. He's had an unbelievable year. All the pressure's off, so I see him just keeping on winning.
Yeah, he doesn't plan on slowing down. We had dinner at Applebee's last night, and he doesn't plan on stopping. So if you're looking for a nice, lazy lap, don't pull up next to Underwood.
Right.
The guy that won $50,000 last time we were there, I'm picking Scotty Richardson.
Yeah. I mean, how can you go wrong with Scotty Richardson?
The way he's driving right now, I talked to him about the million where he was 12th and 3,000 under. He said whenever he went to drop, the nose took. He was up in ET and down on mile an hour.
Oh, I see. Yep, that makes more sense because it definitely seemed like that was a winnable round, but still a tough spot with Galletti coming up on him that fast. So third and final pick. Man,
you better make it count.
I know, I'm looking through these here, and I don't know which one that I want to go with other than the other ones. I'm going to go with my first thought, though. I'm going to go with Dave Triplett.
Yeah, he's due.
I think he is due for a win. Vegas always on point, so I see him getting it done.
I'm going to go with the homer. I'm going with Parker Suggs. Parker's got it done in the door car race for $50,000. I think he can do it again at his home racetrack. He's from Warner Robins and 30 minutes down the road, Silver Dollar Raceway. So I think the Nova that doesn't have low gear, it goes 640 at like 120. I'm going with Parker Suggs.
Yep, good pick. Somebody that's close to home is going to be dangerous, as good as Parker Suggs is.
So we're leaving it up to the listeners. So what you think we should wager back and forth? Last time we did the profile pictures of one another's winner's circle, and we're going to have listener participation on this. The InMotion Solutions final round, Zach, let's talk a little bit about how you can enforce excessive braking and what is excessive braking.
You know, I know people on Facebook probably saw my comments and my feelings on it were, as far as the rule goes, if a car shows smoke, then that's deemed excessive. I don't necessarily agree with that. A door car has a different braking system, obviously, than a dragster having front brakes on it. It's easier to smoke the front tires. I would deem it as excessive means that the car slides sideways, starts to get away from you. Something of that nature I would deem to be excessive. I think it's a tough thing to police. I think it opens a lot of doors. I hope that it's enforced fairly. I just think it gets too open to interpretation when it comes to the enforcement. So I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, it's one of those that's a double-edged sword, because I think it's one of those things, if it's replay worthy, you probably were excessively braking. If you just set it down and straight and you couldn't see the side of your car from the starting line, that's okay. That's completely okay. You smoke them, do whatever.
And they're not even saying if you do that, that you're out. They're saying if you do that, that's a warning.
Right, right. And you know, I don't completely disagree. We can't wait. We can't be proactive after somebody gets killed with it. That's not the way that we can handle this, because it's going to happen, and somebody's going to get hurt big time before long because of it. And I understand it's the nature of the beast, but we can't be waiting for something to happen to change something. We got right. Very, very lucky at the million that he's not hurt. And, you know, it's not the first time somebody's crashed from excessive braking, and like Phil Billy did it at Bowling Green, the turkey race. And that's a guy that's been racing for 30 years.
Yeah, that was more of a extremely slick racetrack.
Well, yeah, but you go to stop on it, that's a problem. He's known to hold numbers and stop, and I know that he knew exactly what he was doing and probably just didn't realize how slick the racetrack was.
Yeah.
We can't wait for somebody to get killed to then say, all right, now we're going to start doing something about it.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think it's that it's a bad thing. I don't want anybody to think that's what I think, because it's not. I think the smoke is not the point where I would deem it excessive, just because the tire slid for a little bit and you saw a puff of smoke. But like, if you see the side of the car, like you were saying, of course, going into the other lane, you know, anything like that is obvious, you know, and I don't think that anybody would think differently looking at that whether that's excessive or not. If you're really crossed up, because then you're not only endangering yourself, you're endangering your fellow racer in the other lane. So it's not just, you know, not just you that you have to take care of. You got to take care of that other guy too. That's everybody's responsibility to make sure that we're all as safe as possible. So you shouldn't be driving recklessly enough to endanger your competitor.
Yep, I agree with that. And as for the warning versus just getting tossed, I've been to racetracks that toss you the second they see smoke. And you know, how do you know that? How do you know for sure it didn't come out of the header or something that, you know, it's just, that's one of those rules that I saw him smoke the front tires. Well, if that's semifinals for $50,000 and he turns the wind light on smoking the tires, you're going to throw that guy out and they're not going to run a final.
Right.
It has to be, they have to understand where the boundary line lies.
Like, I can tell you when my throttle hung at I-57, I pushed the brake so hard in my first instinct to try to stop the car that it was sliding the front tires perfectly straight. I was under throttle, so that's a little bit different than the weight transferring forward, but Scott got down there and thought that I blew the motor up. He's like, what happened? You blow it up? And I said, that was a lot of smoke. I said, no, that was the front tires. I thought it was hung wide open. Just took me a second to get off the brake and hit the switches.
Yeah.
You know, so it went perfectly straight. So
yeah. And we'd love to hear what all the listeners think. And whenever we post this episode, feel free to put your input in on it. Please keep it PG, of course. Don't sit there and MF this and MF that, because, you know, it'll just get deleted. We don't really encourage anything like that, but we are open for debate on any aspect, any of our episodes. So,
yeah, respectful debate. Absolutely. No problem with it all. Welcome it. I think it's a good way to further our sport, as long as everybody's respectful and expressing their opinion. There's nothing wrong with talking, and that's what we're doing. So I think that puts a wrap on what is an awesome episode, Niouf. For our French-speaking audience, which is maybe a couple, hopefully. But thank you all for coming back to us and downloading this, listening to it, telling your friends. We really, really appreciate it. Go to Lost Chevy, go to InMotion Solutions, and get your decals made. And we will see you all in the lanes.
That's right. Thanks, guys.